search. Each man different, living his own way, searching, discovering numero uno.
Welcome, BBCers, to episode number 175 of the SoloQ Educational and Motivational Podcast. Curtis, today we're going to be starting off with a tweet. This is from Aguren Lol. We've talked about Aguren a lot on this podcast, especially he's got a lot of popularity, hitting rank one in Korea a while ago with a very specific sort of way of different view of early game junglers. Full clear jungling, you had the whole, you know, shenanigans with the proactive versus reactive jungling argument. And you'd say, would you agree that Aguren's probably one of the best solo queue players that we've probably seen?
I think probably one of the best solo queue players in the world.
In the world.
Across role, you know, rank one, EU, Korea, and does it in a way that's replicable. Like, he can actually explain what he's doing very articulately. Mm. Probably one of my favorite league personalities and content creators out there.
Very consistent rank one player. He's not just like a flash in the pan.
Very, very good.
Consistent. And pretty consistent with his champs that he's known for as well, the Kha'Zix and all that sort of stuff.
Elise.
All right, so for context, he's done his second career trip. So the last career trip, he was, you know, got the rank one, got all that, you know, publicity, that sort of stuff. And then this is a tweet that came out 3 days ago from the time.
Do you know when his last career bootcamp was? Like the most recent one?
This is literally weeks, in the last couple of weeks.
Oh, okay.
He popped up like the last 2-3 weeks.
Right.
All right, so here's a tweet on November 13th. I've decided to stop climbing. The motivation I once had has faded in the past few days, and I'm not feeling very well. It could be because I haven't seen the sun in weeks, I'm not eating properly, or this small room is making me feel lonely. Thanks to everyone who participated in the journey, even though I reached over 1K, it feels like a big failure. I couldn't figure out how to live and how to play. GG. So there's a couple of angles we can approach to this. The most obvious one is what we talk a lot about this podcast. You got to fix your outer life sort of stuff to be able to perform on the Rift. And it seems like just going back to the really basic stage four, just not healthy, you know?
You know, I had a discussion with Central in one of my recent YouTube videos about his journey from Master to Challenger. And he rewatched that episode where you mentioned about Will, your coaching client. And Will, when you coached him to rank one, there was a quote that you mentioned he lived by, which was, if I don't feel like a beast off the Rift, I can't feel like a beast on the Rift. And that's the quote that resonated with Central. When he doesn't feel on point and he doesn't feel confident in his real life, how the hell can you expect yourself to perform on the Rift? And I think for Aguren's case in Korea, you know, if you don't have your sleep down right, you're not getting vitamin D, you're not eating well, you're not probably exercising, everything's going to come crumbling down at some point. It's not sustainable. And we know, and what I think I want to, the way I kind of view this is, we've done Korean boot camps. Now, not like that. We haven't been the ones playing the whole time. Like, at least from my perspective, I've been doing, managing stuff.
I've never properly done it.
You've never, camp, but you, yeah. You've kind of been in that environment, yeah, in another country, yeah, in a small room, you know, all that sort of thing. I've been watching a trillion scrims and watching people solo queue for that entire duration. Going to a foreign country where English is not the kind of primary language, and especially when you're in a setup that isn't ideal, like you're trying to do it on the cheap in a small room, you've got a PC, you've got a bed, you've got a kitchenette, and especially the cuisine as well, finding good quality food, it wears you down. It really, really, really wears you down. So I 100% empathize with that situation, and I can't even imagine what that would be like to be alone as well, being alone in that situation. I was with other people in Daewoo's at that time. Even that was mentally taxing. After a month in Korea, I wanted to get the hell out of there. But doing it by yourself, that's, you know, mental asylum level stuff right there.
Yeah. So, you know, the main angle that I sort of want to approach this is that first line, I've decided to stop climbing, right? I think this really takes like a level of awareness that if I keep doing this, I can't brute force it. Like, I'm actually going to create really bad narratives around the game because I'm just not going to be at my best. And I'm actually going to ruin my relationship with the game. Like, being aware, like, okay, I need to stop. Like, I need to stop, you know, climb, even just like, you know, stop the game for a while. I think that's really important. It's sort of, I view it sort of like a professional mindset of like, I know that if I keep going down this route, I'm going to destroy my relationship with the game.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's really refreshing to see this as well from a content creator like that. You know, he's ultimately, you know, taking a break for him. And you got to remember from the outside, this is his career. Like, streaming is his income stream. Like, theoretically, if we're kind of really looking at it as what it is, obviously he loves the game and he's playing to climb. But ultimately, it's also his livelihood.
Yeah, maintaining the reputation as one of the best Oligi players.
Right, and that's why people kind of tune into a stream and watch his content, right? Mm. So, yeah, you know, you're absolutely spot on. And I feel like it's a very mature thing to do. And a lot of people in his situation probably wouldn't have done that. They would have gone there, grinded their ass off, started losing a lot of games, developed a poor relationship with the game. And we see that time and time again with content creators. I want to refer back to XFS and Saber, him kind of playing a lot of League and slowly kind of creating a hatred for the game and despising the game to the point where he actually had to quit the game. And maybe, just maybe, Agroom would have or could still very well go down that same route. So that's a really interesting point. I think it's a very mature thing to do.
But yeah, the outside of game is just so important. You know, sleep, having not even just a clean environment, but an environment that you control. You know, and I think that's he might be a bit of a certain case of, like, you know, going to different places a lot of the time. I mean, just for me as well, like, especially when you're going out to eat food all the time, dude, just like, you know, the certain grease and stuff of food, you know, just,
yeah,
it's not good.
Ultimately, and I would say as well, like, you know, I think taking a break and feeling very comfortable in your environment is hard to do when you're in another country, because, like, where do you go if you're unfamiliar with your environment? You know, it's very hard. Yeah, sure, you might say sightseeing or whatever, but it's different. You're not really, really relaxed. Mm. When you're in your own country as well, you know, and you're at home, you know your environment, you know your family's probably nearby or your friends you can always catch up with. But if you're in a foreign country and you have quote unquote downtime and you're probably in a small little room, right? What is your relaxation, really? I can imagine it being very difficult to actually unwind, because you would always feel the guilt. I'm here overseas. I've taken all this time and money to come over here. Imagine the pressure as well that would be on him to even just play solo queue. He's probably like sitting there. You can see he's probably PC in the corner of the room. He's probably thinking, should I be playing? And it would be so hard for him to kind of really come to terms with that. So yeah, I don't really envy that position, I'll be honest with you.
Remember John always talked about the importance of controlling your environment?
Hmm.
And he would, like, do, like, little things, like, really, like, move shit around and stuff like that. Like,
he's like, when you go somewhere, like, unpack your suitcase and use the drawers and wardrobes, like, actually unpack your clothes.
Yeah.
That was one.
That was one for Ross from Ultra Man. I thought that was a really interesting take.
It was an interesting take.
And it felt the controlling of environment, I think, is really important. You know, this is why I think that a lot of the time you see, especially with, like, pro players and stuff, like, imports and stuff like that they just sometimes don't perform the way, because it's just they don't feel like they control the environment. It's not so much like, maybe it's the language and stuff like that, but I think that's the main thing. It's like, I just don't feel this feel is my home. Environment. I think that's part of the reason Faker's had so much success. He has full control over his environment. He's Korean, lives in Korea.
Same organization,
well. Same thing. Like, that would just be his environment permanently, right? He's not moving to another team, different management, all that sort of stuff, you know? So I think that's actually a huge reason as well why Faker's had so much success.
Yeah, I'd have to think about that some more. That's something I haven't really thought about before. Maybe there is something to that, simply just staying in a similar situation. I mean, you know, I guess for all of us here, even sitting on playing in the same PC in the same room, right? I mean, Dopa famously had the same mouse and same keyboards and measured the distance
and the height and monitor height and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's something, definitely something there. Love it.
All right, next topic, Curtis.
Now I'm very curious, in your program when you do your coaching, do you ever use mini games to describe particular aspects of the game?
What's an example?
So, okay. I talk a lot about mage matchups being a miniature game of dodgeball, right? To get across the point that, you know, you need to actively be focused on not only hitting your abilities, but dodging their abilities, to get across that it is a mini game. Ultimately, if you're playing Syndra versus Orianna, or Orianna versus Victor, or Lux versus whatever the mage v mage matchup is, it is inherently some sort of miniature game of dodgeball. And I like to use that kind of mini game, I guess, coaching technique, kind of using that metaphor or analogy, because it gets people in the mindset of knowing, okay, what is exactly they're here to do? Like, it cuts the bullshit. It's like, okay, this is what this aspect of the game is. Right, and it gives them something to kind of orient around. Another one is actually, I use the framework of boxing a lot, because in mid lane, in laning, typically, you know, it's very rare that you have even range champions. Usually one champion outranges the other champion. So for example, let's say I'm playing Vex into Lux, right? One of the main reasons that matchup is so annoying for Vex is because Lux outranges. Right, so it's, or you're playing even Vex into a Xerath, like they just have higher range abilities. Now, the reason I like to kind of use the metaphor or the minigame of like kind of a boxing match is that imagine if you're the shorter ranged boxer, right? You can't just walk in there swinging, you got to actively try and avoid or bait out or, you know, evoke a response from them first in order to close the range to get into them. Because if you're outranged, you need to focus first and foremost on avoiding their abilities first, then counterpunching or making a counter trade. You know what I mean? So, and that's why I like using boxing, because if you're the longer range person, you don't need to worry too much about that. You can be the proactive one in your ability usage because you're the one that outranges them. But if you're on the other side of the coin, you need to try and think about, okay, I need to avoid their damage first, then I can maneuver and make my counterpunch. So that's like another, again, little cool. Kind of like mini that. Game.
Yeah. Mini games.
Not really.
I have The closest thing I can think of is more about like item spikes. Like I have this one with the Udyr called Operation Demonic Embrace, because getting that first item, because your components in it are so shit for Demonic Embrace Rush, right? So you're like, you're not really come online until you have Demonic Embrace, even just clearing your camps and stuff. So I say, you know, this is what our goal is. How can we get Demonic Embrace? That's the mini game, I guess, we're playing for items. This would be the same with like Hecarim as well. Like a lot of champs that like need items to come online in the jungle. But yeah, no, maybe it says something I could think of as well, some more minigame analogies.
You know, I think back it's something that I'm trying to explore more, integrate more into my coaching. And the reason, you know, I feel like, or the reason I know it's such an effective tool is that, you know, we do guides, right? And if you think back to your most pragmatic guides, remember what you always used to say? You used to say, my Olaf guide, I think it was your Olaf guide, your Eve guide, or whatever. The guides that were just really just one game plan. It's like this is one mini game kind of. Like, this is all you do. And like, I'm not saying that's everything about the champion, but it gives them a really good kind of like starting point to feel out what the champion or what this part of the game is really about. And you remember all the comments you used to get on people who watch your Olaf guide were like, you know, this is great. I climbed up so much just from watching the guide because I had...
Just for doing that specific early game strategy. That specific
thing. And the same with my Echo guide back in the day. I had this like thing with the mini game, which is, like getting to this item. Okay, you got to base on this wave, use these DMATs, get to this item, then boom. It's like a kind of this boom, very clean black and white. It's like brute forcing a black and white-esque view of the game.
Yeah, it was brute. Yeah, which is what we don't really do much in League. Exactly. We don't really want that, yeah.
But I think it's an underutilized coaching technique or just a technique for learning in general because... As we know, League is a game of gray area. Everything is specific. Everything is nuanced. Everything is, you know, tailored to that game that you're in. But, you know, I sometimes view it as like a really great way to learn the basics of a particular element of the game, even though it's not sustainable in the long run. It's like a really good...
It's a great starting point.
It's similar to is like, you know, when it's like bowling, you know, there's that when you're a kid and you have like that little stand and you roll the ball, it's like, or the gutters, or like you put up the gutters and it's like, okay, well, I'm still getting the feel of throwing the bowling ball, you know, but it's like an extra little bit of help. And, you know, it's not obviously not sustainable in the long run, but it gives me the feel of how to throw a bowling ball. You know what I mean? And then later on, we can remove them. We can stop doing this gameplay. We can add a little bit more nuance, push down the gutter, the barriers or whatever on the side of the lanes, and then we can actually play real bowling.
Yeah. No, I mean, the game, it's just the more I play, it's just the more we just got to adapt, right? Like, it's black and white rules are just so hard. It's hard, especially when it's for jungle. You know, people talk all the way, or people love talking about this is the way this matchup works, or this bounce way back, but it's just, that's just not how
you got to be adaptable.
You got to be adaptable. The closest thing is, like, for most champs, just get level 4 first and then...
Right.
But then it's not black because then it's like there's all these different sequences that then happen. It's like, what happens if you're matching the enemy jungle? What happens if the lane you're passing towards is watered early?
So maybe it's not... So you're saying that like that way of teaching that you did before with the Olaf, you wouldn't do that
anymore. Well, the Olaf is so unique because he was so strong early. There was no counterplay. Like,
right. So that was like a very unique thing. You could walk
around and do whatever you wanted, right? Right, interesting. There's just so little, which is so rare.
Mm.
You rarely have a champion that is able to, especially at that point in time, you could full clear. That was like one of the first, like you would full clear, but you're also insanely strong.
Right.
Right. That didn't exist back then.
Right. Interesting. Yeah, so something I'm going to have to think about anyway. Maybe you're right. Maybe it's just completely useless, but I don't know. I just feel like it's something that a lot of my clients resonate with.
Yeah, minigames are cool. Minigames are cool. Again, I just have it for items more so.
I want to talk about micro problems for a second.
Micro, God, that's
and this is where I feel like me and you differ a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I want to say...
The weight of micro problems, what do you mean by
that? No, I just think that me and you have a fundamentally different approach to fixing like problems, or what even is a micro problem?
Yeah.
This is why I want to get into this discussion with you, okay?
Okay.
So, all right, I've watched, with your coaching, you talk a lot about, Samuli, I think he plays Nidalee,
yeah.
And I just disagree with your approach.
Yeah.
To fixing micro problems.
So I don't even think I have an approach.
Right. Okay. Let's talk about this. Because I think that, correct me if I'm wrong, your current quote unquote approach is just get in the repetitions.
Yeah.
Keep doing it.
Have a general idea of I sort of think about, how do you want to use your abilities is more so.
Great.
So it's like a great example is like Hecarim, which I have different versions of like the way you want to fight. It's like, do we start with a big R? Do we start with them walking into us and just phase rush? And then we hold our E, then we E. So I talk
general philosophies about how to use
the abilities in fights.
Great. I think that's really good. I don't have a problem with that. Yeah. I think that's really important. I just think that a lot of people think they have mechanical problems or quote unquote micro mechanical problems when they don't at all. My argument is that 90% of, let's say, ability usage problems, including in this miss skill shots, getting hit by skill shots, all this sort of thing, is actually nothing to do with clicking, reaction times, anything at all. It's all anticipation.
Mm.
All anticipation. Mm. So like that 90%. And so I had a review this week, and it was a Syndra guy. He came in playing Syndra and he said, "Curtis, my micro is just atrocious. I miss all my Syndra E's." And he was really frustrated because he's like, he felt like he was capped mechanically. He felt like he was gated. It felt like he came into the review thinking, he felt really helpless and defeated. It's like, I keep saying I'm missing my E's. I know I'm losing games off missing my E's. I'm just at a loss. I don't even know how to fix it. Right. And then I'm like, okay, I'm going to keep an open mind. I'm going to look into these details. Right. And there was a situation where he saw the enemy mid jungle starting dragon. Okay. He's at around the dot bush. They don't see him. Okay. They're just hitting the dragon. There's no ward in the pit. So he doesn't really see it. He knows they're in the pit doing the dragon, but he can't see them doing the dragon. He walks over outside the dragon pit, wards inside the pit. And then and then sees them both hitting the dragon, throws his QE to try and hit the sun onto the jungler, and the Graves just like walks away and he just misses the combo, and then they just do dragon in front of his face, and he's like saying, if I just land this QE, I can kill the jungler. They don't do dragon. The game's just completely different.
Yeah.
I'm like, I totally agree. Yeah. And what I said to him, I said, this is not a mechanical problem. This is nothing to do with micro mechanics. And what I said, okay. I want you to look at this situation through Graves' lens. Graves was with the jungler on the dragon. If you're playing Graves and you see a random ward pop up in the pit, are you just going to stand there? Are you going to sit there auto-attacking that dragon? No, you're going to probably step back or E back, or you're going to have some sort of response.
You're in the anticipation mode. The Graves would be in the defense mindset.
Exactly. You're going to move in some way, shape or form, right? We don't know where he's going to move, but he's probably going to move somewhere, right? So therefore, knowing that as a Syndra, if I ward that pit, of course I'm never going to go for a QE. The only scenario where I would QE is if I knew that I was off vision and I know there's no way they could react to it. So you're
using the fog of war concept.
Right.
Yeah, so that's a part of micro, right? Fog. Was that where you...
No. My point here is that...
My point here is that
the reason he threw his QE is because he didn't know how Graves would respond in this situation.
Okay.
It's nothing to do with his ability or non-ability to hit the QE.
That's right. Yes. Right?
And I'm like,
break it down. That's what.
So if you actually, if you actually break down 90% of my, of like, this is when I look at your client Samoulis Nidalee. His cues. His cues aren't because he has randomly, just randomly missing cues. That's actually such a, it's actually not the case whatsoever.
Yeah, of course he's trying to hit them.
Samoli's problem, no, it's not even, it's not that he's not even trying to hit them. It's just that it's not a clicking or accuracy or problem. It's that he's not viewing the game through the enemy person's lens. He actually hasn't gone back in the review to be like, you know what, if I was that Orianna here, what would I do?
How would I be moving?
How would I be moving? Yeah. Why would I move like that? Yeah. What would be the... And then you ask yourself the question after that. What would be the most annoying thing for me to do in terms of how... Like, what's the most annoying way for me to use my ability? And so we go through all these situations in the game. And most of them were just, again, anticipation problems. They were not mechanical problems at all. I'm like, your mechanical level is completely fine. You have the ability to... be a high grandmaster level mechanical player, even though he's sitting D4 at the moment. And I just completely changed his entire view on that problem. And so, you know, I think the reason I want to raise this is that I think most people listening who think they're terrible at hitting skill shots, take a second to look again. Ask yourself that question when you're looking at that scenario. If I knew, if I could put myself in their shoes, if I was them, what would I do? And if you ask yourself that question, it becomes painstakingly obvious how you would change the way you're fundamentally using your abilities.
Your abilities, yeah, based on their movement and how you would move, yeah.
That's right.
You're not like reacting to their movement. It's again, it really is. What's your ratio code? Is it 80% anticipation or 90%?
I think it's 90%.
It's 90%.
Up.
It is, isn't it?
It's not that, like, League is only like, yeah, sure, there are like, look, I'm not saying everyone is on the equal footing mechanically, right? In terms of clicking and
tethering
and all that. I'm not saying that, but I will say a lot of it, if you have control over your character and you know how to confidently like cast your abilities, you know your ranges, you can control your mouse and you're like baseline average at like LOL dodge game, you can get to a high level in League, like very high level, like mechanically. That's not the thing holding you back. And I just think that a lot of people think it is, but it's not. They haven't taken the time to. It's like having intention with your abilities, but your intention is twofold. And this is the time back to the, you know, the analogies and the metaphors. I think of casting abilities in League like a dance, like the tango. It's a two person thing. The man in the doing the tango is doing things, and then the woman in the tango is doing things. It's not that they're two. They're like both. They're like two independent entities and they're interacting with each other. Yeah. Like it's not just like I do this, they do that. It's like an interplay between two things. It's like, that's the way you got to view ability usage. You're interacting with another human at the end of the day. So you have to view it like there's another human on the other side, you know, maneuvering their character. Mm. And then people say, but I'm never going to be in this situation again. And that's where the repetitions come into play. If you're playing Nidalee, saying again, Smalley's playing Nidalee, and you throw this spear up, and you miss the spear, and then you actually in the review are genuinely curious about like why they were able to respond that way, why they move that way, and what you could have, how should you have used your skill shot? If you actually ask that, do that, and you do that for 2 months, you would see night and day difference in his
yeah, you're just his only usage. Looking at skirmishing your ability usage, hitting skill shots.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. You ask that question and you go through the process, you would be a completely different player.
Yeah.
Straight up. That's my belief.
Yep, I'm going to deep dive into micro probably early next year because I have like sections in my, I'm redoing it on my soul too, like the fundamentals, that sort of stuff. And I'm just going to have a pure just dodging skill shots, you know, getting skill
anticipation.
Shots. Anticipation.
And I think this is especially important for you, Nathan, as
a
junglist.
I've been focused a lot more on like Fog of War recently.
Right.
Because the general thing that I see a lot of people do, how they play, a fight happens and they just put their body in the fight, you know, versus thinking about... How can I use my abilities out of Fog of War? Like, that's my number one priority most of the time.
Right, Fog of War, interesting.
Fog of War, I find, is really, especially as a jungler, is a huge part in my eyes of having good micro, using Fog of War to your advantage. But a lot of people don't think about it, because remember, people don't think about what the enemy's seen on their screen. It's the same thing, right? Mm.
Yeah, it's similar. It's an extension of that 100%.
And the other tools that I have in my kit as well is... aiming at their feet for micro.
You know, I've never done that. I've never done that.
You should try it, dude. It works well.
I've never done that.
That's interesting. Maybe it's.
I mean, I'm not saying you don't need it, but yeah. And it could be helpful. I'm just saying I've never done that personally.
Aim at the character model's feet. I've had people had a lot of success with that.
Really interesting.
And then the thing of like controlling your character, click closer to your character.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny when we talk about this example. Did I send you that clip with the Philip? Like,
no.
I think I showed you it of like anticipation. Like he was anticipating a Morgana cue, right? Mm. And he moved into it.
Mm.
So it's like, how do you explain that for anticipation? And he literally says, like, we even said it before. Right. We're doing a live coaching. We even said it before. It's like, okay, all you have to do is dodge this Morgana cue. And he's like, well, he's like intentionally like looking to dodge it.
Well, I'll have to look at it again because it can be many things, right? Yeah. It can be, okay, well, let's go a bit deeper then. He can.
I'm thinking more now, like, where do you look?
Yeah, where's his attention
focus?
Like,
where do you look? Do you look at your character or their character, Q?
So I had a review this morning with a silver Vex player.
Because I don't know what I do. Where do you look when you dodge his characters? You look at your model or the enemy model?
I actually. Yeah, I look in like a lot of the time using my peripheral vision.
It's peripheral, is it?
It's peripheral vision. Like okay. I'm like, I feel like sometimes when I play League, I'm like, I'm not actually looking at a specific area or like I'm looking at my character, but I'm not really focused on my character.
Interesting.
I'm using my peripheral vision a lot. But I will say, no, I mean, a lot of the time actually, I'll say it's just a really constant flickering between my character and then, and then the enemy. You know what we should do is do the eye tracker and do a BBC episode on that.
Yes.
Because you can look at it from the jungle to see how what you're looking at.
Yes.
And then what I'm doing in like team fights and stuff. Yeah, fights.
That's how you get into Markar.
That would be really... But yeah, and I think that with that guy, in that situation, the first thing that would become to me, because this is why I saw in my this morning coaching, is that a Lux Q was coming out, but he was only looking at his character and he'd already decided where he was going to move before... Like, as the projectile was moving, he's just still moving in that direction. It's like, he's like, if I just click rapidly enough, I hopefully I'm going to dodge
it. Yeah, I think that's what happened with Philip as well. I think that's what
he thinks. He's not actually trying to dodge. He's just trying to play the odds of like, if I click randomly in random directions, maybe it's not going to hit me.
I know the skill shot's coming, but like, I'll just, yeah.
But that's why LoL Dodge Game is so important.
Yeah.
LoL Dodge Game teaches that skill because in LoL Dodge Game, you can't just focus on your character and your model because you just get hit by fight. You got to actually look on the screen and see where they're coming and you got to get comfortable knowing where your character is in reference to all the fireballs coming at you. That's why I actually have in my blow play program a big thing on LoL Dodge Game. We have like a leaderboard and everything. Like I think it's really, really important to get the feel of peripheral vision.
I need to get into that. I'm gonna go on a micro binge even for myself as well because my micro sucks. Obviously, that's what I'm not known for having good micro, so I got to work on that.
Yeah, and yours is mind boggling though. yours is because you should have the anticipation down pat. I feel like yours is just laziness. No, complacency.
It's a disrespect for it. It really is. I have a disrespect for micro because I've won so many games without needing it, right? I've gone to challenge without having to need it. So think about what that's done.
Don't think it's that important.
Yeah, I don't think it's that important, but it's exceptionally important. I know it is, but subconsciously I don't think it is.
It's like self-sabotaging. I feel like it's a chip on your shoulder where like you don't want to feel like you have to be good mechanically. Like you want to be so good with your decision making that it overrides having to like outplay people. Because like that's not the part of the game that you enjoy.
No.
You enjoy the, you know, everything else, but like the macro and being in the right place and outplaying people like reading where they're going to be win conditions tempo, and all. Like you want to win it every other way, but having to rely on micro.
Yeah.
Because that was never really...
It's never been something I've even focused on again in my coaching. No.
No. And look, to be fair, as a jungler, that other stuff is more important. I think, straight up. I think you're correct in saying that.
Yeah.
Like, as the jungle role. Mm. The jungle role. Look, fundamentally, right, the jungle role is about many of these other cerebral things, right?
That's right,
like,
yes.
Like, skirmishing and, you know, hitting your skill shots is definitely important, but it's not as important as these other things, I would argue.
Yeah. I guess it depends what champion
you play. Yeah, it depends on the champion you play. Yeah. If you play Nidalee, then it's incredibly important, you know. And then I want to talk about here quickly. Okay, so
Before we move on, people ask about LoL Dodge Game.
Mm.
Do you want to do a quick little guide about how to get LoL Dodge Game? Because some people aren't going to know what it is. So it's LoLDodgeGame.com and
LoLDodgeGame.com and then you go skill shot and then you go skill shot and dodge. Skill shot and dodge. And then you go hard.
Got it.
Yeah. Not ranked, whatever. It's just the hard one.
The hard,
yeah,
hard setting.
The hard setting. That's what I do. Done. And you can't use Flash.
Yeah. Not allowed to use Flash.
Yeah. You just have to click. That's right.
And shoot
things. I have a video on my YouTube about it if you're interested.
Okay. So they're typing what? Coach Curtis, Lord Dodge game?
I'm sure that will come up, Lord Dodge game, if you type in Coach Curtis, Lord Dodge game. So I actually feel like I did a little bit of accidental therapy today without even realizing it. I actually, like, I was doing it in the middle of the session and I felt like I was like a therapist, like an unprofessional, obviously, therapist.
Yeah, an amateur therapist.
And I want to talk about this, like, this little exercise I did, okay? So a client came in and he gave this VOD and it was just basic mistakes. And this is master tier client, right? And that's always a red flag. If someone comes in and they send you a VOD that's like, oh, here we go, I died to a level 3 gank or whatever it is. It's like, they already know what I'm going to say. If you're at this level of play, you should already know that this is an end of a mistake. You should already know how to review it. So that in itself, and then we've had this discussion before, the VOD they send gives you a lot of information. Okay.
Yeah, so why would he send that? He already knows how to problem solve this.
Right. And look, we got into started getting into the matchup specifics, whatever. We did all that. And then I said to me, I'm like, okay, man. I said, what is really bothering you? Like, I'm like, what is, because he said I just get really like frustrated and in my games. And I'm like, okay. And so what are you frustrated about? And then I said, okay, we're going to go through an exercise here. So imagine we're on the Titanic and you see the tip of an iceberg here. The way you want to view it is that the tip of the iceberg is the initial emotion. Okay. So you just see the tip. That is the initial emotion. So if you're feeling frustrated, you're feeling angry.
You can see it in the facial expression. You can feel it in the vibe, the energy.
The same thing in your own reviews. Like if you have a visceral response, like there's a big negative response to something. Yeah, great. Boom. You've done step number one, which is you've noticed that there's an iceberg and you're approaching that iceberg. There's the tip of the iceberg there, right? But I said, all right, let's go a little bit deeper. Let's poke our head underwater for a second. Like, oh shit, this thing's bigger than we thought. Okay. And then we got to go to the next layer. And the next layer, after you've identified that emotion, is, okay, why, like, when, like, what happened specifically to elicit this response? Like, what happened? What in what moment in the game specifically made you feel this way? So you're getting really jacked up. What happened? Was it that you died to a gank? Did you fail a roam? Did you get solo killed? What happened? Okay. Then he says, okay, yeah, it was this moment here. I'm like, okay, great. So now we've recognized the emotion. We've recognized what actually brought about that emotion. Let's go even deeper. Let's go to the next layer. What about this is frustrating to you? What about this was angering to you? Like, what made it so frustrating to you? And then he said something like, yeah, because I know after I die here, I know that I'm just going to be really far behind. I'm like, okay, well, why? And then, okay, let's go a little bit deeper. Why is that so frustrating? It's like, oh yeah, because it means that like my chances of like winning this game are like really, really low or whatever. Like I really want to win this game or whatever. I'm like, okay, well then why is winning this specific game so important to you? And so we just followed. I just kept going. I just go this layer and the next layer and the next layer.
You kept asking why.
Yeah, just kept asking. I just kept going why, right? I just kept going deeper. And I'm like, I'm visualizing this. I'm drawing it as we go along, like this iceberg.
Oh, cool.
The layers, right? Yeah. And I'm like, we're getting to the root cause here in a moment. Mm. And I said, look.
So everyone's just watching this.
Yeah, we're just watching. I'm just doing this. And everyone's
in the Discord. It's just a normal session, right?
It's a normal session.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm like.
It all stemmed off from that level 3 gank.
Yeah, essentially.
Okay, yeah.
And I said, well like, what? Where are we at now? And like, we get to the bottom, and then I'm like, well, then why is this win so important to you? Like, what's so angry that you have to win this game? And it got to the point where I'm like, you've just got a fixed mindset. And what we got to at the end was he didn't fundamentally believe that he could improve at the game.
Love it.
How fascinating is that? Mm. So it started with giving a shit VOD, which really rung alarm bells. And then I asked that question and go to the specific moment he got upset, like why he was getting so upset. But you just keep going, why? And the point was that he'd been kind of going between 0 and 200 LP in Master Tier for like quite a long time. And he'd actually just didn't believe. He just genuinely fixed mindset. He's like, I don't know how to improve. I don't believe I can improve. That's why he's so frustrated, because if he wins this game, it's like a relief. It's like, oh, I'm getting my LP. I've got some sort of like, I'm not, at least I'm working. I'm potentially climbing past my point. Yeah. And then when he loses, it's like, it's like, it's like he's because he's not actually getting any learning from it.
Yeah, the progress there's no progress. Way. Yeah.
So think about how frustrating that would be. Imagine if you had a game, you die, you know you're probably going to lose the game, and you're not going to learn anything from anyway. You fucking lose your mind. Mm-hmm. Right? And the only way we came to this was doing that process. And now look, I said, I shouldn't have to do this for you. I'm here to point you in the right direction, but I'm like, this is what stage four issues are, and this is how you find them out. This is what you need to do. This is the work. This is the interesting, the tough conversation you've got to have with yourself. And for a lot of, and for, you know, I remember like how I felt in the VOD. I'm like, wow, people don't actually even know how to do this. Like, it's not actually common knowledge of just asking why. And I wanted to show people how to do it.
The and introspection.
This is what you guys got to do. If you're that bothered, you're feeling you're getting that jacked up about your games, go through that exercise. Yeah. Yeah. The why, and view it. It's like an iceberg. Keep going. It's like this huge thing under the surface. It just looked like one little thing at the top, didn't it? Oh yeah, I got pissed off because I died to a gank. And a lot of people write that off. I was actually tempted when I remember I did the review. We looked at the matchup specifics, looked at the gank, whatever. I was going to just end a review it.
Yeah,
and that guy would have been plodding along.
Yeah, do it, keep going next, it again.
Keep
yeah.
going again and again. Then nothing yeah, would have been yeah. resolved.
So you've got to, if again, go back. So if you're having a severe emotion, again, anger, frustration is going to be the most one yep. for League. You need to really be asking, why am I having this emotion?
Especially if it's causing, like, if you feel like it's causing really, yeah, severe emotion, self-sabotaging behavior.
And you can't just be like, okay, well, why? It's like, why? Well, Nathan Curtis, I just don't want to lose LP. Like, yeah. why? But we got to go
there's,
further
there's
down.
More than that.
Yeah.
And now sometimes, I mean, look, for some people, it can just be like, I've, you know, I'm just genuinely frustrated because I've, you know, I wanted to get some rank by X amount of time. But then that, even then it's like, well, why is that so important? You know, it's like, oh, I have some unrealistic expectation or whatever it might be. You know, this is usually, if you're getting that upset, there usually is something that you need to resolve 9 times out of 10, you know?
So this is why League's so cool, Curtis, because it teaches you, it's the game is so hard, so difficult. The rank system is so precise that the feedback, you're instantly getting the feedback instantly, but also over a long time as well, you're seeing it. So it forces you to, you have to introspect.
You have to review.
And that's what sports, all that, because you don't really have that in life that much. Like, put in effort, outcome instantly. Like, instantaneously. Like, okay, well, I lose this game, I'll lose this skirmish, right? You, like, break down, like, why am I losing this skirmish, that sort of stuff. That's what's so important about competition and sports and stuff that you don't really have in life. Because, you know, let's say if you start having, like, you know, bad habits and stuff, you know, maybe you don't see the consequences of that for years, right?
100%. And this is where I had this discussion on that my interview with Central, where it ties into a broader discussion about, I truly believe to this day, there's only two ways to get somewhat success in League. You got to be completely blissful ignorance and not give a fuck and just completely, like, don't think
just
deeply.
Just having for so much fun in the game.
Complete have like you know, the Bow special type thing in a way. Well, he's not the greatest example of that.
Yeah, he's still introspective.
But like, let's say, you know, we probably all know people who are just like really happy-go-lucky, you know, relax, not overthinking shit, have a bit of fun.
They just play 15 games a day.
Not overthinking it. Don't get too tilted, whatever. And they just play, don't think. And, you know, because they're actually able to express them best selves because they have no mental baggage, they're actually able to make a decent amount of progress and just trust their intuition naturally because they don't know anything else, right? So there's like very, very shallow thinking. Or you think very deeply and understand why things actually happen the way they do, and which leads to you being able to like create consistency in your gameplay, et cetera, et cetera. But getting to that point is the hardest bit.
Yeah.
Because it's all the demons that come out along the way and trying to manage
But the hard part as well is that when you can go for the overthinking route as well.
Yeah, that
and
as
then
well.
You can create such sophisticated narratives that it takes ages to unbreak them. Like, I always say that sometimes I feel like you can just using this example again, like the smarter you are, sometimes the harder it is to improve at League. I found as well, especially for some of my clients.
But you know why that is, and even Central came out the other side of this was because you need to very switched on intelligent deep thinkers. They understand, they actually do understand the difficulty of the game. They understand how hard the game really is. and they understand the amount of like permutations, the amount of things that can happen, or and how one little mistake can change the entire outcome of the game. Like they think in that game, like, oh, if I didn't make the mistake, oh my God, like this game would have been so easy. And like they're now thinking, why did I do that? I've done, and they can recount specifically how many games I've done that, the last, like, the date that they did that, like what other people are thinking. Like they will go to the ends of the earth mentally, you know, to think about that. But the reality is that, Nathan, what you need to do is you need to have like deep thought, but then a respect for the intuition for the game, muscle memory. That's what Central struggle with. You can think deeply, but if you don't have a respect for the muscle memory feel of the game,
that's the don't think, right? So you simultaneously have to think but don't think.
That's right. That's right.
That's what you need to get to.
Yep.
But some people just are only thinking. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. Or only feeling.
Yeah.
What you got to do both. League is a game of both. You got to have insane amount of feel and intuition, and you got to be, a sophisticated thinker and think deeply and understand the consequence of your actions and think in other people's perspectives and think about the chain series of events about things and think about win conditions. This stuff, it takes a lot of, what do they call it? Like, what's the term where it's like you're thinking one iteration and then there's the second. There's like a word for it.
I can't help you, Curtis.
I can't remember. Anyway, it's like second order or third order. What I mean?
First order, second order, third order.
It's like it's like if this happens, then that happens. But if I do that, then that. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like you're thinking two steps in advance, three steps in advance, four steps in advance, you know? Moving on.
All right, we'll move on to our Reddit post. This one is not from Summoner School today, Curtis. This one's from Reddit League of Legends. This post, this was this week. It has 600 upvotes and about 600 comments.
Okay.
There's only one part of this that I really want to go over. If you want to read the post, I'll have it linked. But essentially, the title here is A Challenger's Perspective on League in General, as well as addressing people's common concerns with the game. And there's a couple of dot points here, and he has this, lots of little dot points and overall arching titles. So the first one is, the game is not bad. Second one, the game's pretty balanced, up harassing us developers. The next one is, Elo Hell, Loser's Queue does not exist. The next one is, in any competitive setting, there will be unavoidable negative emotion toxicity. The interesting one, I want to, the last point here, Curtis, this got a lot of discussion in my Discord as well. I think we've talked about this on the podcast maybe before. Anyone can hit Challenger, but you must be playing to win rather than simply playing for enjoyment. And I'll read the post here. And then he says, but it takes people years to hit Challenger. Yeah, but this is the difference between playing with intent and playing for fun. You'll never hit it as a casual unless you're able to play 10 games a day for an eternity. People play for 7 years and remain gold, and others can hit Challenger in two. Time does not necessarily equate to skill, but over time, intentional playing will directly correlate to skill. In addition, in physical sports, coaching is extremely normalized, if not just flat out necessary. In esports, it is not as common for individual players or looked down upon, in my opinion. Simply put, there is no way a casual player will ever outclass a player who is obsessed with the game, no matter what rank they may be. A more talented player may beat a less talented player initially, but if the other player has an obsession for perfection, he will eventually become inferior. Obsession can become talent itself. A player who thinks about the game more will not only have more reputations in matches, but also create a habit of processing situations in the game, and that means more thoughtful repetitions. Enough thoughtful repetition will lead to near perfection. TLDR, if you want to hit Challenger, stop playing as a casual and play a lot of games with a lot of intent. Even if you have barely any talent, obsession can amount for a lack of initial skill. So, Curtis, when I first read this, I think of like how I would be talking like back like when I was 19, 20 years old. You know what I mean? It's like a very, I don't want to say
image. Surface level.
Surface level. It's a very sort of like a cool idea. It's like anyone can challenge. If you just be obsessed, you know, like all those motivational dreams.
Yeah.
It's like, at the end of the day, if you just look at just really logical, just raw statistics, it's not.
No.
It's literally not possible for anyone to hit Challenger.
No.
People are, again, realizing the percentile of how hard it is to get to Challenger.
Getting Challenger is incredibly difficult. Incredibly, incredibly difficult. And it doesn't matter how obsessed you are. There are people that, I mean, obsession is helpful. I'm not going to deny that. Obsession is helpful. But, I don't think it's an overly helpful thing to say that anyone can get Challenger.
Yeah. we talk a lot about the importance as well of like coming to league, of like having that time, the years already prior, either playing other computer games, or just like, yeah, being on the, like playing PC games.
Mm.
That background is so important.
Well, you know, I want to make it very clear, actually, just one thing here before we get into that topic. Mm. You know, I've got people in my program that are absolutely obsessed.
Mm.
Like we're talking dedicate their life. Like their life revolves around the game. And they're still...
They ask a lot of questions.
They ask questions. They come to reviews all the time. They think about the game. They follow the process. They do everything. And they're still just low master. And been master for a long time. You know, I'm not saying they will never get challenger. But like I think it's so disrespectful to the amount of people that are obsessed. There are so many people that are obsessed about the game. There are people that are obsessed about the game and play with intent and are in diamond for years. Low master for years, you know. So the reality is that, like, I think that, you know, having obsession is something that will help you a lot. And I think it's kind of like a borderline bare minimum. Like, you have to be really dedicated and passionate about the game. I agree. That's kind of like barrier to entry. But there's thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people that are dedicated and passionate about the game and really care about the game and center league around their life. Like, that's shit ton. If you're a challenger player on a major region, you're borderline a semi-professional at the game.
Yes.
Right?
Mm.
So, yeah, sorry, go on about the background of gaming.
Yeah, background, like a lot of things need to sort of be clicking in a way, you know, like a lot of the sort of the time that you play the game, you know, at the end of the day, let's just flat out say it. If someone is like 22 years old, right? They've never played a PC game before. They've only played console, and they're rocking up. They're starting the game now. I would say it's impossible for them to be a challenger.
I don't think I would say
impossible. Maybe
I wouldn't say. I don't like the word impossible.
Very.
It's just like very hard.
Extremely difficult.
Very difficult. Yeah, because by the time they get. Yeah, I mean, the game will be evolving so fast as well.
The game will be evolving fast, yeah. And also, you know, as you get older as well, like...
You have less time.
Less time. Like, the time aspect is very... People don't realize that people... Like, it's really cool to say in isolation where people just sit there for...
Dedication.
But you can't. Like, people have... You got to work.
You have a relationship.
Yeah, you have a relationship. You got to work.
I will say this confidently.
Yeah.
I do believe anyone can get master.
You think so?
I do believe that.
Mine is Diamond 4. I'm not convinced that I'm master yet. No.
Really?
Yeah.
Just because I've just seen...
Yeah.
I've seen some absolute characters get master here.
Really?
You know, like...
No, but what's their backgrounds like, Curtis? Like... Come on, let's really... Are you sure?
Look, I think that anyone who is genuinely passionate about the game... Like, I think that the... I think that master tier. Okay, let's get specific. Okay, what makes a challenger? Let's have a quick discussion about what we think makes a challenger player. Okay, a challenger player. You know the main. Okay, let's actually make it even clearer. Let's make the question clearer. What is the differences in your mind? And let's just be from a jungle and mid perspective. What's the clear differences between a bottom of master jungler and a challenger jungler?
Oh, it's so hard. I mean,
spitball.
All right.
What are things that what comes to mind?
Speed in decision making.
Okay.
Ability to process information extremely fast. Yeah, I mean, obviously micro is absolutely one. Just they're just better at the champion. Like really good at the champion. Like really got it a lock. These are the first things that are coming to my mind. There's so many others. That's basically it.
They're the main ones. First ones. Okay.
The process information one is extremely important. And speed and size and confidence in plays. But I don't know if that's a result.
But how are you not saying anything to do with win conditions? I feel like junglers that are like high level do like low master junglers, I feel like have little to no understanding.
That's like, from your perspective.
From my perspective, I'm like, I feel like so a lot of them are like absolutely clueless about what they need to do in a game. That's at least from my perspective, from Elena's perspective. Anyway, we'll come back to that.
I'm just trying to think about some of my members.
Yeah, think about your
really
clients.
Understand win conditions. Like that's not really going to get them that. I feel like it's actually
Right.
Okay.
But is that just your program?
So, wait, is that win conditions? Are you talking about win conditions from the level one or like adapting to a win condition in the
game? Like adapting in the game. Like they might have a plan at the start. Yeah. It's like, oh, all right, see this matchup.
Yeah, everyone can have the plan.
Everyone has the initial plan. They know where to path.
Yeah.
But when shit hits the fan and when like the game is panning out, like they don't know how to like read the game state at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like zero idea in mid game. Like I feel like sometimes.
Okay.
That's how, at least again, how I feel. Yeah. As a low, I'm talking low master job.
Yeah. And I would say that even, my master tier players and stuff, we need to work on that quite a bit.
That's huge. Because I feel like that's for mid. I was going to say the same thing. Like for mid, like I have a really pretty clear framework. Like all the way from, again, gold up, right? Yep. Like platinum, right, is about you and your matchup. Like the 1v1. Emerald is about the 2v2, right? Diamond is about the comps, 5v5s. Master is now going to like the extreme about the game, like 5v5 on steroids. So it's like, okay, you need to know how that top matchup like pretty clearly plays out and like how snowball it is. And you know, what does that kill mean? If you were to roam there, like what does that mean? Like you need to do it in a very sophisticated way. What does like a kill mean for me in this game? Like if I get a kill here, does this mean I can carry? Or does this mean that kill doesn't actually mean that much and I still need to get someone else ahead and I still need to play for someone else? Like that on steroids in every comp, in every game. That's what makes, in my opinion, a challenger player. They know how to win a game of League of Legends.
They know how to kill the Nexus.
And the only way to get to that point is you need to look at the game to an in-depth level from everyone else's perspective. Like, I know if my bot lane in a specific game gets a kill, like, I know very clearly, like, what that means for the game.
Well, yeah.
Or, like, if I get a kill, if I'm playing Orianna and, like, based off their comp, how effective is this one kill? Sometimes a kill won't mean jack shit. Yeah. But in other games, I've won the game. Like, one kill, I win the game. Mm. Like, straight up, I know I can win the game from one kill, from, like, 8 minutes in the game. And that only comes from a shit ton of experience and incredibly in-depth thought and real in-depth curiosity across the board. To get to below master, I feel like you can do it many ways, but like you don't need to have a super sophisticated understanding the game holistically. Right. Like you can be very good at your champ, you can know your mid jungle 2v2, you can have pretty clear reference points, and then that's really it. Like I've seen players in my program that they have a lot of champ mastery. Like they're not super sophisticated mechanically, but they're pretty competent. They can like land majority of their abilities. And they have like just clear reference points. Like, and it obviously depends on the champ. Let's say they play Swain. It's like, all right, I get to this item. There's a dragon. You know, roughly, can we fight this or not? You know, if you're just playing basic intent, you know, and you know the frameworks of how, okay, how does my champ really basically work in this situation? Like, you can get with a lot of those simpler champions, you can get to master tier. Now, that's very different maybe if you're playing Yasuo or something, but like there's a lot of champs in mid lane that you can have pretty clear reference points and get to master.
Like Malzahar, Annie.
I mean, Xerath, not even. I'm even talking to other champs. Like even like a champ
Victor,
like Syndra as well. Syndra. Like there are a lot of champs that it's like, all right, I get to my 40 stacks on Syndra. I get to my Lost Chapter. I get to my Ludens. And like, okay, I want the enemy to come to me. I want to make sure I'm not getting flanked. I want to play around neutral objectives. Like a lot of mages have this very clean. Even like there's other assassins as well. Like, even Qiyana. Qiyana, surprisingly, has very clear reference points. It's like, all right, especially if you're going the tier Muramana build, it's like, all right, I get to my my Dustblade or whatever it is, and I get to my Muramana, and then I play off my R cooldown, my level 11. I got to play around neutral objectives. If I don't have R, I don't make the play. It's like, you can be very rigid, and you can follow those rules in a pretty rigid way, and you can get a lot of success in solo queue. If you have the champ mastery and you know your limits. And I don't think that's unfeasible for the average player personally, and that's upon my experience. And I've seen people at the moment like getting high diamond that barely, you know, they're really not, I wouldn't say the most sophisticated gamers. And just because they're
playing, their gaming background is not that.
It's
like their first competitive game.
And they're just, you know, they're just, but they have champ mastery, and the champ mastery gets them nowadays to a lot of them high diamond. You know, that's at least what I see. And now this is where maybe jungle and mid are different. Maybe to bridge that gap between D4 and master, as a jungler, you do need to go to that kind of like level. I don't know. I can't comment on that, but I'm just speaking from my experience.
To be honest, I actually haven't thought about it that much, dude, honestly. Right. Sort of a question of anyone can hit challenger. Like, I just look at John Wooden over there and I'm like, would he engage in the conversation? Can anyone be an NBA player, right? You know, like how would he approach that question?
Yeah, I don't know.
I feel like he wouldn't.
I feel like
he'd just be like, how would he respond, Curtis? I don't think he would care that much. It's just about putting, you're doing your best every day.
Whether you know, they could or couldn't, it doesn't affect
him. Yes, it doesn't affect. That's right. You just process, doing your best.
What he was obsessed about was about everyone. He just wants he wanted every person on his team to express their best self.
Yes.
That was his mission. Yeah. I know he says it in a different way. Yeah, doing the self-satisfaction and knowing you did your best to become the best that you are capable of becoming. And that level is different for everyone.
So that, because like people will say success is challenger, but his definition of success is not being in the NBA.
Wherever, yeah, and that and success for everyone is different depending on what their capabilities are.
Mm, exactly right. Right, yes.
And your capabilities at max, given your situation, might be diamond.
Yeah. It might be emerald. Even, emerald, yeah.
That could be it. Given the amount of time you're able to put into the game, right? That is part of your capabilities, right? Mm. So it's not like everyone has the ability to sit there and do, you know, 2-3 blocks every day, 5 days a week. I mean, that's just completely unreasonable. But, yeah, maybe I'm fucking delusional, though. I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's just not really a conversation, to be honest.
Yeah, so hard. It is a bit theoretical.
It's really theoretical. Like, theoretical. I could see people losing their minds around
it. And it gets people off the wrong track.
Yeah, off the wrong track. It's focused on the wrong things.
It's a fucking bad thing.
I think we lost our minds there as well.
We did.
We got baited.
We got baited in. Yeah. I will say, though, just about just on this thing, Nathan, on this topic, I like the idea. I like the message, though, of like, you know, being clear. Do you want to play the game casually, or do you want to, you know, actually play with curiosity, intent, and problem solve? Like that's what I. That's how I interpret that whole thing. You know, from his Reddit post. And I think that's an important question we should ask ourselves. And wherever that gets us, it doesn't really matter. It's the effort and the satisfaction in going through that journey. All right. You want to do any comments that you wanted to look for in that one?
No, I think we're not going to bait any further, Curtis.
Okay.
Let's move on.
So Curtis's clips?
Yep.
Let's do it. Let's get into the details, guys. And welcome everyone to Curtis's Clip Corner. All right. So Nathan has not seen this clip. Now, this is going to be a bit of a different Curtis's Clip Corner, okay? I'm going to show you this. Now, I want you to review this as if you were this kindred in this situation was maybe your coaching client. Okay? I want you to really break this one down, and I want to get your take on this, and then we're going to look at it from the mid and jungle perspective, all right?
Okay.
So let's play this one out. So for the people listening, looks like the kindred here finishes top scuttle and is looking for a bit of a cross map through mid here. We've got Atalia mid. And look, to be honest, if you're not listening, if you're not watching this, you just got to watch. Too many variables. You see Kindred cross-mapping.
It's 4 minutes in the game, so he's going for a double crab. The jungle's popped up. Yep. Was he done a recalled?
Yeah, he's got it. Looks like a tier 2 boots, right? Because he's got the... if we go back here. Hecarim has tier 2 boots.
Interesting.
Right?
Okay, yep.
So let's go back here a little bit again. Sorry. So how do you review, how would you review this, Nathan? The situation.
Wow, very interesting. Okay, so let's look at some variables here. Yeah. So it's so interesting. So there's a Nasus and Atalia mid. You know, a lot of people say Nasus mid's quite useless, but I also view Talia as quite a really weak early game champion.
One of the worst in the game.
It's one of the worst in the game. So weak. Right? It's super piss shit. Weak. In skirmish, especially Rift skirmish.
Early game, the champ, I just want to give you, like you're not a champion until Lost Chapter level 7, straight up.
So whose perspective are we reading this from? From Kindred's perspective.
I want you to, if that Kindred brought this into a clip, so posted this in the Nathan's clip channel and said, well, what do I take away from this? Watch it again.
Well, I need more context on the early game.
Okay, so watch the early game.
I gotta watch the early game.
Okay, skim through the early parthing.
Because like, how did we get?
Because he dies to the Hecarim. That's another problem.
Okay, so he goes red into his blue Gromp. Is that the classic? The Kindred starts his red buff, and the typical blue Gromp. Okay, so this is not even good for him. Yeah, this is not good.
Yeah. So what happens is he goes to the blue
because the only way this works is if Hecarim starts.
Because it looks like Hecarim did the Wolves, I think. Let me see.
Yeah, he did the Wolves start. Yeah, it's a new path, by the way. So what they do is they do Wolves, Raptors, Raiders. It's like it's a good anti-invade path as well. Yeah, so
that's so smart.
It's already in a review for Kindred. It already is in a review.
Okay, well, let's just continue on. Because obviously this affects the mid lane here, right?
Okay, so again, we've got to review for the mid lane. Look at this Kindred. Now he's skipping all these candies.
Yeah, no, what happened? But Talia messed up here, though. Because Talia, this was the second, there was two clips that I got sent. This is the first one. I said this was Talia's fault. Talia should be collapsing here.
Yeah, absolutely.
But she doesn't.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So then Kindred...
Is Hecarim kill Kindred?
Yeah, I think so.
So the general principle, guys, is as a, if you're invading, you've got to get level 3 first. So he's just got to commit to the Gromp there.
You got to do Gromp. And let your blue get taken.
Split map. Yeah,
it's fine. It's fine, though, right? Yeah. At that point. I mean, it's still bad, but like, it's not that bad.
This is why I hate level 2 invades. I'm anti-level 2 invades in Solitude. Okay. It's so flip. Unless you're playing Graves or Kindred and they start blue buff and you catch him on the Gromp. That's the only high percentage royal.
So now you're screwed, right? I know it's already under review for her, but the reality is that...
So what does Talia do now? Okay, so then now Kindred goes... Wow, so he's still top here. He's level 4 now to level 3. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we'll get back in the game.
So that's why Hecarim is able to be based, right? And has tier 2 boots.
Yeah, has tier 2 boots. Now,
so then he gets the mark on top side.
Now the question you ask is, okay, he gets mark on top. Yeah. Okay, so where is Hecarim going to go out of base? And he's going to go straight 100% back bot side.
Yeah.
Wolves and Rams. So he's got back bot side out of base.
Yeah.
The question you ask is, Kindred, okay, I'm level 3 with 30% health right now.
Yep.
I know Hecarim's bot side. So, yeah, it's really simple. Like, you just can't go bot side here, dude. So, the only thing you'd possibly be doing.
And you can't go bot side because Hecarim would have based, or like, would have been able to spend his item.
And he's also level 4.
And he's level up on
and
here.
His bot side. Yeah, you cannot go for the bot grab in a million years. So, and he would have some gold. So, what you'll do is you'd probably want to defend your Raptors away from Hecarim. So, what I'll actually be doing is Kindred. I'll be going down to my Raptors here.
Mm.
I'll skip my Gromp to Raptors, Krugs, then. Reset and maybe deploy hold smarts. You can deploy straight back.
All right, whatever. There's something about that, right? So anyway, this Kindred then goes onto bot side.
Yeah,
and then like this happens, and these are the sorts of clips I get all the time.
Yeah, interesting.
These sorts of clips from like the situations are show shit. And so this ties into a discussion which like he doesn't want this, right? Like
Talia doesn't want this.
He doesn't want this. He's like pinging for assistance. Like the Kindred's like pinging for assistance. Oh. And this is where a lot of my midlaners in my academy have these situations where it's like, the reality is that you got to ping on off, but it's so hard for the average player, especially if you're in platinum or something, to like ping this off.
In my stream, let them rot. You just let Kindred rot. Just do whatever. Yeah. What does Talia want to do here?
Yeah, that's
push the wave and base.
You just want to chill for it. Yeah, yeah. Shove the wave and base. Jungler that's die. Right.
I don't give an F about this.
Exactly. That's the same conclusion I came to. And so this ties into a broader discussion about how, and it's really good, by the way, to hear your perspective. It makes so much sense. Because I was like, I didn't really understand this from a jungler's perspective. Yeah. So again, I'm referring to it a lot, but my interview with Central was really interesting because he said one of his big breakthroughs was that he had to be unapologetic about the decisions that he's making in the game.
Yes.
You have to have that selfish kind of fuck all of you mindset. I'm going to make a decision. I'm going to do what's good for me.
Unless it's high percentage, I don't give an F.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Unless it's high percentage, I don't give a shit. Because the reality is that we have to... This is the hardest thing about League. You've got to be okay with losing the game off this play.
Mm.
But you got to know that if this is a high percentage play, yes, okay, this might work 70% of the time. I mean, let's say me basing, is 70% of the time, leaving this Talia, leaving this Kindred to die is the best play 70% of the time, right?
Yes.
That means... 3 out of 7 times, you're going to lose the game because, like, let's say, just because your Kindred dies, your jungle tilts, whatever, right? The reality is that you're playing the odds game. That's why League's like poker. You actually have to view League like an odds game. So if you have these clear reference points and things that your champion wants to do, you have to have faith that if I stick to these kind of like, for the most part, in most situations, like stick to my reference points and I take the high percentage play majority of the time, I'm going to climb in the long run. And you can't get distracted. And even though you may lose the game off this play, like maybe your jungler tilts, whatever, you have to actually be at peace with that, be okay with that.
Yes.
And that's so hard. That's one of the hardest things about League. And I think this is a really good reminder, and it's what I said. It's like, you got to just ping this off. You got to be unapologetic. You got to screw other people over, and you got to be selfish. And if we play this situation, 100 times, a pre-first base, first strike Talia without Lost Chapter is just a piece of shit. You're not going to be able to win a 2v2.
As well, combined with a level 3 Kindred against a full level 4 based bought Hecarim. Right.
But let's just ignore that for a second. Let's say the Hecarim and the Kindred are actually equal level.
Mm.
Let's say they're both level 4 and the Hecarim hasn't based. Yep. I still
as well.
Still just fuck
let
it.
Them rot.
Let them, yeah, leave them. Doesn't matter. Yep. In your words, let them rot. Like I think honestly, it's way better for the, especially if you're unsure. Like, because these are the two kind of trains of thought, Nathan. I'm unsure. Maybe I can make this work. I'm going to go there and limit test. Yes. Okay. You can do that. You'll get learnings. And I think that's good to do every now and then. But I think that, like, in the long run, like, you really, it's like you have to do both. You actually have to do both. You have to, like, do these limit tests and fuck around and find out. But then you also, once you've done a lot of fucking around, be like, okay, I've fucked around enough. I know my limits now. I know that I am really a piece of shit pre-level 7, pre-level chapter. I'm just going to get to my level 7 lost chapter and see what I can do.
It's like you're like, I can fight early. I definitely can.
Yeah.
But, like, it's going to be really good.
It's going to be really good. Exactly. It's going to be really good. Yeah.
It's got to be high percentage.
And again, notice how this is just, you know, very messy. League's just a messy game. Mm. It's just a fucking messy game, Nathan.
It's messy.
It's a messy game. And this is why I love that, you know, you use the plane crash analogy. You know, this is like,
it's a mess, dude.
It's a mess.
This is ugly. This game's getting ugly. If you let Kindred die, the game gets ugly.
Yep. And that's it. So real TLDR, this one quickly, guys. You're going to have to do some limit testing. You're going to have to do the old fuck around and find out. But then you're also going to have to be very strict to the T, stick to your reference points and feel what that's like. And you just flip-flopping between the two.
Hmm.
Very interesting. Moving on.
Mailbag time. Away we go. Song. Alrighty then. Our first question here comes from Shorty Prince. The title of this email is Playing Better in Long Sessions and 3-Block Distribution. Hi Curtis and Nathan. I'm a long-time BBC listener and I'm an ADC player. I really enjoy your content about motivation and the thoughts you guys have about the game, despite the role disconnect. Recently, I just hit Masters in North America, and I've noticed something interesting in my sessions. I try to do 1 3-block a day because I believe in them for the same reasons you guys do, but I've noticed that I normally do not play very well in these sessions. Most of the time, I play after classes at around 5 to 6 p.m., and by that time, I'm pretty exhausted from the day. Because ADC is a role that depends so much on reaction time and insanely fast decision making, I think the quality of my games is just very low because of mental fatigue. I think my best sessions are on the weekends when I can sleep in and I don't have to worry about class. My first question is, do you think playing 18 games over the weekend, 3 3-blocks a day over the course of Saturday and Sunday, is as valuable as playing 18 games over the course of the week, 1 3-block a day with 1 day off? Could the 5-day break between sessions actually be beneficial in resetting mental? I listened to the most recent podcast about the science of taking breaks, so this is something that I am thinking about. Another thing I've noticed is that when I have very long sessions, no 3-blocks, I start playing better 4 to 5 games than in the beginning. I believe this is for 2 reasons. Number one, because ADC is so mechanically intensive, it takes me a couple of games to actually warm up. After my first 3 games, I just start to feel good. After a certain amount of games, I just become detached from the outcome. If I'm playing a 3-block, I can constantly have this voice in my head that says, what if I lose all 3 games? What if I just waste 3 hours of my life with low quality games that I don't even get a chance to perform in? When I'm queuing in long sessions, I get to the point where I'm just solely focused on my own performance because after so many games, winning or losing doesn't matter. After 1,000 games, I'll always be at the rank I deserve. So if I just grind a fuck ton of games, I don't feel as bad about the individual losses. I feel like with a 3-block, I'm actually more attached to the outcome of the session compared to if I just grind 7 to 8 games in a row. So that's his first question.
Well, I think he's actually completely wrong in terms of his hypothesis as to why he's not playing well. I think it has absolutely nothing to do with energy levels. I think if you're a young kid, you're going to school, you know, just eat a sandwich and play, man. Like, you know, you're fine. Like, you, like, trust me, you should be wired.
Yeah.
You know, you shouldn't ready be having... You should be wired and ready to go, you know. So I don't think you're...
I mean, you did this back in your university days. You'd play...
Oh, yeah.
You would be...
Study... yeah, go to uni all day.
We'll play pro matches.
Yeah, and play pro matches and play out of my mind, you know. It doesn't matter. You know, that age, especially if you're obsessed and you're enjoying it. I just think what you've got is more fatigue from... It seems like he's making a massive deal out of the three blocks. That's really what it is. Mm. It's going to feel more fatiguing because you're jacking yourself up in terms of thinking about the results. You're making a big deal about it because like, that's why it's stressful emotionally probably as well. And I think, you know, I think other people have written in with the same thing where they feel like, oh my God, I can only play three games. So I don't want to end on a loss. Or I want to make sure that I get LP from this, like net LP from this session.
I want to have the chance to have that to happen as well. It's the...
Right.
Let's say the weekends for him, it's like, okay, well, I have a chance to just get a shitload of LP.
Exactly. It's like, it doesn't matter if I go 0-3 because I can then win the next six or whatever the hell it is, right? Or like, even if I lose that, I get to play nine games the next day anyway. So what's the point, right?
There's overall feeling like more progression rather than the 1-0-3 block or the 3 blocks a day, 1-3 block a day.
Right. And I think he needs to really, I guess, fix his relationship with 3 blocks. I think he's really... got the other way around. And I think that the whole 18 game over 2 days is a band-aid solution to the core problem, which is you're not really utilizing 3 blocks properly. Hmm. You know, the way you got to think of it is like, okay, I'm going to go in, I'm going to do a 3 block, rain, hail, or shine. I'm going to have a crack. I'm going to get some learning and then that's it. It's not about net LP gain or loss. It's not about anything else. Whether you take one thing away from a game or three things away from a game, it's just that I play. That's what I do. That's my routine. It's like going to the gym. It's like I go to the gym. If I'm tired, I go. If I'm feeling great, I go. You go no matter what and you do what you can. That's it. Now, some days you're going to be killing it and you're going to feel like a beast. Yeah. Other games, you're not. I'm a big fan
of low intensity blocks.
Yeah, just do it. Yeah, Nathan talks about that all the time. This low intensity shitty blocks. Just do a shitty block and be okay with a shitty block.
Because it's not so much about the result of that block. Like, hey, it doesn't make logical sense. It's about not making a big event of it.
Yeah.
It's just rocking up for work. Here we go.
Yeah, that's right.
It's that long-term mindset that you're actually developing by rocking up.
And then I think that it should be the other way around, if anything. I think the consistent blocks, say... 1 block every 5 days, and then maybe you do a 3 block, or let's say even a two session block on a Saturday. You should take Sunday off, like if anything. Like I actually, again, am a massive advocate of breaks. I think breaks are so important. Like I think if you're not taking at absolute minimum 1 day off a fortnight from league, I think you're setting yourself up to fail, straight up. Like, and that's something I will stand by at all costs.
Till you die, Curtis.
That is one, because I've seen it time and time and time again, not only with many, many, many clients, myself as well. And I become delusional. I think, it's fine. I'm feeling fine. Because you're not though, but you don't know that you're not feeling okay until you actually take the break and you get perspective and you feel refreshed. So I think taking 1 day off at least a fortnight is super important, if not even once a week. Especially if you're playing 6 games on that Saturday and then getting... you're playing 21 games a week. That's great. If you're playing 21 games a week, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice, Nathan, for how he could go about actually fixing his relationship with 3 blocks? Or what do you suggest that he does?
Not really. I think the first tool you need to adopt is like, I'm going to embrace going 0-3, dude. Like, let's get exciting. Going 0-3 and just, again, not feeling like any progression. You got to build up the habit. I think you just got to get... My advice would be do it for a month and see how it goes.
Mm. And I think my advice would be remind yourself that your goal is to be 0.01% better every game. If you can walk from that game... Take one minuscule thing. It's like, oh yeah, here on this fight, I should have spaced that one ability better. If that's your only learning, great. Own that. I'm getting 0.0001% better. Excellent. I've got some forward trajectory. And that's it.
It sounds like he's developing this mechanically intensive thing. He says that he plays better. He needs more games.
Hmm.
Low dodge game. Let's how about we get a warm up before the game going. Maybe you need to actually have a bit of a warm up before a low dodge game. Try that. That's another thing as well. Try that. If you feel like that you're playing, you don't actually ramp up until game 4, game 5 again. I think that could probably be some narrative. But how about we figure out about a warm up?
It should never take more than one game to warm up anyway. At absolute minimum, right? Like, and you should have a routine, whether it's, yeah, aim booster or whether it's LoL dodge game. You need to have a routine, man. You got to have a schedule to get your head in the game and get your hands warmed up.
So he says, my second question is, do you think that some players might actually benefit from playing more than just three games at a time? Everything about three blocks makes perfect sense theoretically for me, but in practice, I find that I perform better the longer my sessions go on, almost like a flow state after a certain number of games.
Well, look, I think the process is different for everyone. Our three-block process is based around like some biological stuff, like things that we've heard about how the brain can only focus for a set amount of time. That's what we based our three-block off of. I'm sure there are outliers, and you know, I'm not going to completely discount the possibility or disregard the possibility that you could be an outlier and maybe you are. Yeah. You know, you can focus.
Well, there's many examples of people challenge players. You could ask everyone. Like, they've definitely, most of the time, I've probably done sessions of 5, 6, 7, 8 games in a row, of course.
Right. And I don't want to sit here and be like, you should only play 3 games. That's not what we're here to say. It's just an option. If it works for you, it works for you. If it doesn't work for you, it doesn't work for you. No big deal. You need to find the process that works well for you.
My short answer to that question is yes, it is beneficial, 100%. It can be beneficial to play more than 3
depending
games
on
in a
your
session.
Personality and your situation.
Yes.
And if you're how energetic you're feeling, how well you're sleeping, what your diet's like, many, many things. If you're feeling great and you're feeling like you can play 5 games, then you should play 5 games. Yeah. But like, you know, just proceed with caution. That's all I'm going to say. Proceed with caution.
And just reflect.
Reflect. If you're going to do that whole thing, you're going to do the whole 5-game, 6-block thing, you got to be really honest with yourself, because that's where a few things really come into play. Addiction comes into play. I mean, yeah, a lot of copium comes into play, right? Where you think, oh, it's just one more game. Oh, I don't want to end on a loss, or I'm feeling fine, don't worry. And you realize you're just like spacing out. You don't even realize, but you just want to make up for the last game that you played. Like, there's so many bad habits that can creep up on you. So as long as, like Nathan said, reflect, then you should be all right.
It's all about everything with this podcast and our coaching. It's about having intention and reflecting. That's what we're all about. Yeah. My next question comes here from Sirachi. The title of this email is Struggling on Main, but Doing Unbelievably Well on Smurf. Dear Decursor Nathan, my name is Sirachi, a Talon main in the mid lane academy, hitting my peak of Master last split and ending on it. This season, however, I've been playing considerably worse and found myself stuck in Diamond with a pretty low win rate, which is okay. We all have bad splits, so I told myself there's no need to worry about my shaky gameplay as long as I stick to the process and don't get complacent. One day, however, I realized that my Smurf account that was using solely for warm-ups was higher than my main with an insane 63% win rate. At first, I just thought it was funny and laughed it off and kept using that account for warm-ups. I proceeded to continue not caring about the game on that account, reading my stream chat in between miniature LOL states, and sometimes even first time in champions like Akali, Azir, and Yone top for just shits and giggles. I even checked League of Graphs and found out that that I FF over 40% of the time on that account, probably because I'm thinking, oh, I'm just here to warm up, so it doesn't matter. Before I knew it, I hit Master while my main was stuck in mid-Diamond. I'm honestly not sure what to make of this, so I wanted to hear you guys' opinions. Obviously, this is some sort of mental issue, and despite myself saying that I should follow the process and that LP doesn't matter for improvement, there is definitely something going on in my subconscious that is making my play worse. Perhaps I try too hard on my main because deep down I'm thinking about the wins and the losses, and it's affecting my gameplay. Somehow, me not caring about my Smurf account to the point where I'm first time in champs and throwing up FF votes just because I'm bored is a better extreme than me tryharding my main. What do you guys think? I mean, this is simple. This is what I did last year, dude.
Well, I think there's a few
expectations.
Things.
There's no expectations.
Expectations. Okay.
So you got up to OPGG. What are we seeing here?
Well, guys, let's look at the OPGG first, right, and then I think we can go from there, right? So the first thing that really jumps out to me is the amount of games played.
So this is the
this
Smurf
is the Smurf,
account,
right? Okay. Look at the amount of games played here, Nathan.
Yep, so we've got, for the listeners, we've got about 70 games played. With
not many games, right? So you've got to remember that, you know, this might not be the greatest representation of the rank because the MMR and, the sample size, right? So, you know, I don't know if that changes much, but I think it's just worth noting, right? So what were your experiences, Nathan? Because you're the one that actually did this. You played on a second account. Your second account became higher than your main account.
Yeah, that's what I did last year. What did you find? I only do one account this year, but last year I did 2 accounts. Yeah, I found that it was just the removal of expectations and just having fun and playing free flow.
And so to be clear, you were significantly higher on your second account than your main, right?
So I finished Yeah, Challenger 900 LP on my main last year, and then my second account, yeah, my Smurf account was 900 LP,
yeah,
and my main account was 500 LP, so a 400 LP difference.
Interesting.
Which is about the same default master.
But you were you doing a block on your main, and then how many games were you playing on your set on that second account? How'd that work?
Well, the process that I was doing was, well, I switched it throughout the day. So initially I was doing three games at the afternoon and then three games at night. And that was my low intensity games.
So the low intensity games were meant to be on your...
my night games.
Your second account.
Yes.
And that still happened to be higher win rate.
That's right.
Right. And so your reflection, your whole learning from that experience was this, due to the lowered expectations.
That's right.
You were able to express yourself better.
Yeah.
Not get too bogged down in
just playing. To play. Yeah. I was playing just... yeah, that's my, it could be many other reasons, but it could have also just been, again, maybe there's, because again, I didn't, especially in the beginning of the season, I was just winning a lot of games. The sample size, it could have just been some like mental buff where I had, where like I won a lot, same similar to this, and then suddenly now I'm try hard on this account. So it could have been initially low expectations and then try hard in.
But I think for her, it's a little bit different because she actually streams, I think.
Yeah, the streaming was...
she's legit streaming, so she streams. And
so
like,
she streams these games on this account.
Yeah, that's what the email said,
and she's still
right?
High. Like, yeah. You play worse on stream.
That's what I'm saying.
That's
so fascinating to me.
It's a very interesting case.
So I think she's onto something, though. I think on her main account, I think she's definitely doing some self-sabotaging behavior there. And maybe it's similar to the previous email where they're making a massive deal out of the block. It's like, here we go, strap yourself in. You got your three block. You're going to, you know, you better be quote unquote high intensity. But you know how we had this discussion on another episode where, you know, sometimes you play better on 95% intensity rather than 100% intensity. Like taking your foot off the gas that little bit and lower it and just like being a little bit more, less intense and less jacked up about just winning these games or at least trying your best. Because like the more you give, the more painful it is when things go wrong, right? Like if you're giving your absolute all for the majority of people listening, they get really annoyed when things don't go right, right? Because they know they're giving their all. They want to get the results, I guess, for that game. So yeah, I think it's similar to the previous email where I think she's probably, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, making a massive deal out of her intense block. That's putting added pressure onto herself. And that's leading to her performing worse on her main account. I think that has to be the case.
Yeah. Expectations, too much pressure. The idea of intensity maybe is, just overwhelming.
Because I think what people do, Nathan, is people conflate intensity with results.
Yeah, like results. Or specifically in a game, they think they have to do crazy things as well. Yeah. I think when I say intensity, I'm like running around solo killing everyone. But that's not how League works. We know that's not how the game works.
That's right. And I think as well, like... you know, this second account here shows that when you're just trusting your instincts, going with your intuition, you know, you're still trying to win, but not like super intense. You know, you have really good quality intuition. You have really good understanding of your limits. And that's what's happening here. This second account is just the manifestation of you. It's like your baseline into intuitive play.
Well, she said she picked master before, right?
Yeah.
So this is just getting to her skill level.
This is getting to her skill level. That's right.
But like, yeah, maybe you're not actually playing that intense yet and you're going to get stuck. You'll maybe go back to diamond in the next couple of games.
Potentially.
Right. Again, that's what I'm saying. Maybe you get tricked. You get tricked with these accounts. So
you get tricked on Smurfs really
sample size. Yeah,
exactly.
It could be a combination again of a bit of luck, things just going your way. And as well as like, again, playing at your level, just at your level.
Yeah, I don't think she's playing above her level whatsoever. No. I think that is her level. Well, specifically, it is her intuitive level. That's like what happens if you just play, express your best self, see what happens. That's exactly the rank that you'll get. Very interesting. I mean, in terms of feedback, Nathan, in terms of how she can deal with that, I mean, I think it just ties into... You need to calm down a little bit, I guess, on your main account. You need to just come in with...
Take this advice and you need to fix this account. Stop playing on this master account, honestly. That would be my advice. You need
right, literally
to
straight up
ditch it.
No, but she streams. But she streams.
Oh, she streams on that account.
Yeah. So I think it's unavoidable.
Okay, well, whatever you want to do then. That's my advice. I'd say cut the streaming as well.
Cut the streaming. Well, I think, honestly, my advice is the same advice I gave to the previous email, which was... you have to have that 0.01% learning mindset where it's not every, or even do the iceberg thing that we spoke about. It's like, okay, well, in those games where you're feeling really frustrated or getting tilted, why? Like go down the layers. okay, why does this game feel like it's do or die? Why? And go further down, further down, further down, and then really be honest with yourself. I think there's some introspection that she needs to do. I think there's probably, again, the iceberg is a lot bigger than it appears. I think that's probably the case. And I think probably what it ties into is she has a lot of people who probably follow her climb and are watching her account. She probably has expectations or other, I guess, external factors that are impeding her journey. And I think there's some tough questions. She needs to have that tough conversation with herself. I think that's really the solution here. So I think we're just scraping the surface, to be honest. I think what we're looking at here is the tip of the iceberg, exactly like that comment before.
Agreed. All right, our last one here we'll do. This is we love our success stories, Curtis.
Yep.
So we'll do a success story here. This one's from Nathan. The title of this email is, hello, coach. Oh, sorry, the title's email.
Did you write this one in, Nathan?
Yeah, well, this could be literally a payback to write here. No, this is, the title of this one is just thank you. All right, hello, Coach Curtis and Nathan Mott. My name is Nathan, and I've been listening to your podcast since the middle of season 11, during my large break from the game when a friend of mine introduced me to it. The main punchline for this email is this. My life has changed for the better, and it's thanks to my wife and you guys. And writing this email is another step in my journey of self-improvement. A little bit of background. I'm 29 years old. I'm married, work a full-time night shift job where I listen to this podcast. Every BBC episode, he says he's listened to. I grew up playing video games and multiple sports. I've always struggled immensely in school, and I have ADHD. Maybe this is important to note, but throughout my entire journey, I've been playing a combination of Teemo, who is my one trick currently, Trunamere, Fiora, and Nasus, who I haven't played since Season 8. I've been playing League since March of 2014, nearing the end of my college semester, when my two best friends introduced me to the game, and I immediately got hooked. I played an absurd amount of games, with my friends mostly, having fun but further destroying my grades. I hopped into ranked for the first time near the end of the season, playing about 50 games and ending in Bronze 2, so that was Season 4. Same story for Season 5 and 6, except I would play enough games to get into Silver and then stop. Season 7 was the first time I made an attempt to take the game seriously, where I had the goal of getting into Gold. I ended up in Gold 3, playing only about 100 games. Season 8 had the goal of getting Platinum, but after failing my promos into Gold 1 three times and losing 15 games in a row, I gave up for the season, but again, only after 100 games. Season 9 is when I started playing Trunamere, and after only playing 210 games or so, I got to Diamond 4. My ego was at an all-time high, of course, but I did know that I still knew nothing about the game, but this is also where I hit my lowest point. I had extremely toxic expectations for myself, always putting myself down, cursing myself for being bad at the game, and not being able to climb any higher. My relationships with other people and myself were deteriorating. Seasons 10 and 11, I hardly played the game, only about 50 games in Season 10, where I had unreasonably high expectations, and in Season 11, I took a big break from the game to play other games and improve myself. My wife, at the time girlfriend, who has worked with people with all sorts of mental disorders and disabilities, had eventually convinced me to talk to my doctor about ADHD, and he agreed that yes, I do have it. So in August 2020, I got medicated. Season 11 is when my improvement journey began, with my large break from the game. The time away from the game took a huge weight off my shoulders, and came back to the game in Season 12 with a clean slate, ready and excited to play the game again. I had a loose goal of getting Platinum that year and placed in Gold 2. I was reviewing my games to the best of my ability and being curious about the game thanks to my break in Season 11. And your early episodes about managing expectations and accepting your level of play. I played just about 440 games and went from Gold 2 all the way to Gold 2. And I had an absolute blast for the first time, and it was a game changer. I was okay with my rank. The toxic expectations that I put on myself and so many other people put on themselves were pretty much gone. Even though it was lower than in previous seasons, I didn't care. I just enjoyed the game and the improvement process. Currently, I'm ranked Platinum 1, hoping to get Emerald before the end of the season, but I'm at peace with the knowledge that I might not. I have not achieved some kind of perfect bliss or tranquility with the game. There are still some games that I don't review, and times when I still get frustrated by a certain matchup. Days where I don't make enough time to get a block in, but that's okay. I'm still improving my process and getting better at it very slowly. For what seems like the first time in my life, or at least in many years, I am happy and look forward to my future as a whole, hoping to one day get to Master Tier. No matter what challenges I will face, I'll be able to take them on thanks to your lessons. Once again, thank you guys so much. I look forward to the next time I write in.
they're my favorite success stories, because it's not about a fancy rank. It's not about a fancy achievement. It's about this mindset shift. And he's just genuinely a happier guy.
Enjoying the game more.
Enjoying the game more, better relationship with the game. And I would say just more, he just seems more content, you know, and it's not really a matter of if he gets some massive achievement or
it's
even
not about
when.
The rank, guys.
It's not about the rank. It's about his relationship with the game and the time that he's putting in. Is he enjoying the time that he's putting into the game?
He's enjoying the game more going from gold 2 to gold 2 than
it
was.
So was it gold 3 to gold 2, was it?
No, it was just gold 2 to gold 2.
He didn't go anywhere. Yeah.
And compared to when he was diamond 4 and just, his life was turning into ruin.
And that's what this podcast is all about, right? And it's about developing a healthy relationship with the game. It's about being honest with yourself, having that tough conversation. And it seems like he's really turned the corner for the better. And he just seems like, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's, I think that's what this podcast is all about, really.
I love these stories of like these long-term players, dude. Like season 4, he's been playing for what, how many years?
But they're the hardest to change.
Yes, they're very
difficult. I think a lot of people listening to this wouldn't actually even appreciate how difficult it is what he's done. For those people that have played for the game for over like 8 years, it is so, and especially if you've achieved a high rank in the past of diamond and you've gone back to gold, you know how hard it is to be at peace.
For your ego.
Yeah, to be at peace with, like, to come to terms with the idea that you're now a genuine gold player sends people mad. That recipe, that's like a recipe for disaster right there. There are many, 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 many people that would never come out of that. They would be stuck in their ways. They would have a miserable relationship with the game. They would either be addicted and or complaining on Reddit about how shit League is 24/7. They'd be, you know, writing and complaining about losers' queue, Elo hell, teammates, blah, blah, blah. But he's, you know, he's got that growth mindset. He's chipping away. He's doing it in his own time. He's having a crack, and he's, most importantly, he's having fun with it. Think about how crazy that is. Imagine if he was to have a conversation with his previous self.
So in a couple of years,
they wouldn't even be on
enjoying the game, and he's like diamond four.
They wouldn't even be on the same wavelength. It's like legit two differing people, you know. And I think that's just so inspiring. And there are many people that need to hear that, and that it is possible. Those people that, especially the long term league players, it's an incredibly impressive feat. It'll be very interesting to hear from him again maybe another year. See how he's going. Yeah, see how he's chipping away.
All right, that's it for today's mailbag. Then
beautiful.
Any final words, Curtis? Any to wrap us up? So when we're recording this, by the way, the World Finals hasn't.
That's right.
Yeah, so you might be thinking, what are your thoughts on Worlds? We'll do that next episode.
So I want Faker to win. That's it. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I think everyone's rooting for Faker, Curtis.
Gotta root for Faker.
Yeah.
T1.
That will be his fourth World Championship. Is it fourth or third?
He won season 2, season 3.
No, he won season 3.
And then
season 4.
Did he win season 4?
I'm looking this up. How many worlds has Faker won?
This is embarrassing, Nathan.
Yeah, I know. I'm pretty sure my guess is 3.
Here we go.
Yeah, he's won 3. Yeah, so this will be his fourth.
Wow.
If he was to win. But it'd be on finals he's been in, though. He's been in, what, 7 finals? 6 finals?
Yeah, it was even last year.
And then when he lost to Samsung as well.
Insane.
The GOAT Insanity. Of League Legends. All right, so we're looking forward to that on Sunday.
Yep.
Keep on improving, guys. 3-block process. We'll see you guys next week.